From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Extraterrestrial Contact with Kathleen Martin. Please take a few moments and remember the 3,000-plus people who have lost their lives 18 years ago and some who continue to lose their lives from the after effects in our worst event to hit our mainland, 9/11. In a moment, we will discuss the tragedy of 9/11 with Richard Gage. Stand by for that. Here's what's happening. The Trump administration is finalizing a ban on flavored e-cigarettes after the outbreak of a vaping-related illness that's now sickened 450 people and resulted in at least six deaths. Simply saying, we can't allow people to get sick and we can't have our youth so affected, said the president. Democrats and increasing numbers of Republicans in Congress have pressed for flavor bans, age restrictions, and other curbs on the sale of vaping products. They're urged that the FDA to move faster to investigate and regulate e-cigarettes, which have been touted by manufacturers as a way to wean people from traditional cigarettes, but have also led to what the FDA calls an epidemic of youth vaping of nicotine. Publix is joining the growing number of retailers, asking that customers no longer openly carry guns in their stores in states where open carry is legal. With its new policy, the supermarket chain follows the lead of Walmart, Kroger, CVS, and other retailers who have made similar announcements last week. The moves come after recent mass shootings in California, Texas, and Ohio. Nearly all Americans are troubled by the state of the media, according to a new study from boutique PR agency Propeller Insights. The survey of 1,010 American adults found that more than 95% are troubled by the current state of the media, with 53% citing reports on fake news, 49% citing reporting gossip, and 48% citing lying spokespeople as the key causes. A federal probe into Amazon's market dominance is reportedly underway. The Federal Trade Commission has started interviewing small businesses that sell products on Amazon, asking them how much of their business relies on Amazon. Let's check in with our expert on such matters, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, so what's wrong with Amazon building and building?
Yeah, well, we've of course talked about this a number of times in the past, and one of the things to keep in mind about this kind of investigation when it comes to Amazon as opposed to, you know, other kinds of firms is with Amazon we're talking about physical stuff, physical merchandise, physical delivery of merchandise, and people, and in contrast to a lot of internet services where people aren't paying money for them, they're getting them essentially for free, people are spending their hard-earned money buying things from Amazon. And what has happened over the years, and this is why small businesses are so key to this, is that Amazon has in many ways devastated small businesses, especially in small towns, and many large businesses. If you look at the collapse of the electronics big box stores, for example, it's not completely Amazon's fault. Obviously, online retailing isn't all Amazon, but sometimes it almost seems like it is.
Well, why should they be punished for being innovative?
Well, the problem, of course, is that as you destroy your competitors when it comes to merchandise, not only do you put the smaller businesses, the mom-and-pop stone-and-mortar stores out of business, which has repercussions throughout communities, again, especially small communities, more rural communities, they depend on this. You lose a few jobs here, a few jobs there, and it's a cascading effect. But once you have a giant like Amazon that controls so much of the physical merchandise, and remember, they're also taking over delivery. They're trying to, they have their own delivery systems now, and that's putting the traditional delivery systems in jeopardy. What happens when you have something like that that becomes so dominant? Well, obviously, they can start doing price fixing. This is a traditional problem. And this is why the FTC, this is exactly within the FTC's mandate. I mean, this is a traditional study of market dominance that can lead to price fixing, where ultimately it comes out of our pocketbooks. This isn't a kind of theoretical thing where people aren't paying money. You pay Amazon. You pay them real money. And so the impacts are very real, and have tremendous impacts to the not only people's individual finances, but potentially at much broader levels too, including, you know, national economy. Amazon is gigantic. The impact they have on the economy now is really,
no,
really
it's huge. But they're not price fixing at this point, are they?
How do we know?
All right, so it's worth looking into.
One of the problems that you have is, remember, Amazon doesn't only sell things that they ship themselves. They've also become the way that a lot of small businesses have to funnel their merchandise through Amazon. Otherwise, they can't really get anyone to even look at that merchandise. So it's another case. Remember, Amazon isn't doing this for free. Amazon's taking a cut.
Right.
So little by little, all the different layers, all the different aspects of competition in these kinds of markets has been consumed by Amazon.
Well, yeah, but Lauren, listen, today they had a report that 38,000 news people around the country are losing their jobs, have been losing their jobs, because people aren't reading newspapers anymore, or television news locally is on the down.
Yeah.
I guess we can blame the internet for that too. When you look at things like the Drudge Report and CNN and Fox News and all their online services, are they going to go after them too?
My thinking on this is that, you know, there are ways where, you know, when we're talking about online services, you know, where people are still getting their news, right? Whether you're getting it reading a screen or whether you're getting it from a physical newspaper or sometimes both. That's a different kind of thing to me, at least, than when you can't. I mean, have you been to a Fry's lately? And we have those Fry's stores that are very popular electronic big box stores.
No, I've not.
They are empty. The shelves are empty. People tell me they're like ghost towns.
People buy online for the convenience. If you don't need an object or something right away, you buy it online and it's delivered to your door in a couple of days, and, you know, it's convenient. You don't have to go park in a parking lot. You don't have to do any of that.
Yep. And you know, it could be said in some ways that the road to hell is paved with convenience, right? Because when you have one retailer that has so much control over so much physical merchandise, that can be a problem.
Lauren, I landed this weekend with Tommy from Denver here in the Los Angeles area. There were 25 people lined up for Ubers and Lyfts. Normally, they would have jumped in a cab. Those days are gone.
Yeah, and in fact, there's another interesting example there, which is, for example, Uber is in terrible financial straits.
Yes, they are.
They're bleeding money. In fact, they just laid off, I think today it was announced, or yesterday, that they laid off another like 400 people from, you know, and the problem is, of course, what happens? So you have Uber, you have Lyft. The traditional cabs are going out of business left and right. What happens if Uber fails?
Well, what will happen is once the cabbies go out of business, Uber raises their prices.
They raise their prices to the limit that the government would allow them at that point, or one of their competitors fails, and now you have just Uber, just Amazon. I mean, we know what the result is in these kinds of situations. So, we can blame the internet or not blame the internet, but I think in the case of Amazon in particular, it's completely appropriate for the FTC to be looking at.
All right, there's a show here, Lauren. I think we need to do something on this. Thanks. Let's keep in touch. Oil tycoon T. Boone Pickens has died at the age of 91. Pickens died of natural causes at his home in Texas, surrounded by family and friends. Pickens was a self-made oil mogul who had a lasting influence on Wall Street. President Donald Trump continued his verbal assault on the Federal Reserve, which he blames for slowing the economy, and tweeting that the central bank should cut interest rates to zero or even set negative interest rates. The president also called Fed officials boneheads in his tweet. A significant expansion of Social Security currently under consideration by the House Democrats would extend the program's solvency and expand benefits by raising payroll taxes on high-income earners. If passed, the bill, the Social Security 2100 Act, introduced by Representative John Larson, a Democrat, would make the program solvent for at least 75 years by continuing to build gradually and raise payroll taxes starting in 2020. Chuck Kopp is with us, of course, the president of IDP Consulting. Chuck, first of all, your thoughts on the Social Security increase. I guess something's got to be done, huh?
Well, it's a little bit too late. I looked at this Social Security 2100 Act. They say that Social Security admits they're going to go broke in, by 2035, and they want to extend this out 75 years, so what's that, 2095. They're going to do this based on raising payroll taxes, FICA, 6% up to 7.4, something like that. We are not accounting, however, George, for the $6 trillion in intergovernment debt. That's the trust fund that's been raided and spent already. We owe that to the trust funds, all three of those trust funds. In addition to that, we have $211 trillion in unfunded liabilities. That's according to Lawrence Kotlikoff. He wrote the book back in 2004, The Coming Generational Storm. People should look that up. That inspired me to write my book, America's Financial Reckoning Day, because I'm 68 years old. I think you're about the same age. And this is the demographics that are coming to bear in the U.S., and it can't be resolved. There's 10,000 retiring every day. So it's a very big problem. I don't think we can address it. Maybe in a future radio show, we could talk more about that.
And Chuck, what do you think about the president trying to tell the Federal Reserve lower interest rates?
Well, this is micromanagement. And Trump, he tweets these things. He did it yesterday or this morning. An ABC research poll said 60% believe we're heading into a recession. You can see it with the store closing and so on. And that's not so much due to Amazon, as you just discussed. That's only about 10% of retailing is online. The rest of it is the slowdown. We're seeing it in the freight, in the big rig sales and so on. Caterpillar is down for 6 months. That's a global index. So the Fed is expected to lower rates next week. All our eyes are on the Fed, and Trump wants them to go to zero or negative rates. These are the lowest rates in 5,000 years. I've seen the chart. Zero or negative, George. So that doesn't boost the economy. It only creates bubbles. It's hurting pensioners and savers and fixed income.
Sure.
And we can't service our national debt, to boot. That's why we're really trapped. The capital markets are way too dependent on the Fed. It's like a third mandate to keep the stock market going. And we're in election year, as I mentioned last time. So that's going to be the theme. And the ECB tomorrow is going to potentially lower it from negative 4% to 6%.
That's amazing, too. Chuck, thank you. Chuck Kopp, of course, his website linked up to our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. An Englishman spent almost 3 years and $37,000 to fight a traffic ticket. The initial fine was $120. Unbelievable. In a major first, scientists have detected water vapor and possibly even liquid water clouds that rain in the atmosphere of a strange exoplanet that lies in the habitable zone of its host star about 110 light years away from Earth. A new study focuses on K2-18b, the exoplanet discovered back in 2015, orbiting a red dwarf star close enough to receive about the same amount of heat and radiation from its star as Earth does from our sun. That could be a very interesting possibility. In a moment, Richard Gage joins us. We will be talking about his continuing work with the American Institute of Architects and the founder and CEO of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie here with you. The 9/11 attacks were a series of four coordinated terrorist attacks by the Islamic terrorist group Al-Qaeda, they say, against the United States on the morning of Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, 18 years ago. The attacks killed 2,996 people, injuring over 6,000, caused at least $10 billion in infrastructure and property damage. Additionally, people have died from the 9/11-related cancer and respiratory diseases in the months and years following the attacks. They're still dying. Four passenger airliners operated by two major U.S. air passenger carriers, United Airlines and American Airlines, all of which departed from airports in the northeastern United States bound for San Francisco and Los Angeles, were hijacked by 19 Al-Qaeda terrorists. Two of the planes, American Airlines Flight 11 and United Airlines Flight 175, of which I lost an uncle by marriage, were crashed into the North and South Towers, respectively, of the World Trade Center complex in Lower Manhattan. Within an hour and 42 minutes, both 110-story towers simply collapsed. Debris and the resulting fires caused a partial or complete collapse of all other buildings in the World Trade Center complex, including the 47-story 7 World Trade Center tower, as well as significant damage to 10 other large surrounding structures. A third plane, American Airlines Flight 77, was crashed into the Pentagon, which led to a partial collapse of the building's west side. And the fourth plane, United Airlines Flight 93, which in about 15 minutes you will hear air traffic controllers talking to the pilot and a terrorist, was initially flown toward Washington, D.C., but it crashed into a field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, after its passengers thwarted the hijackers. Some believe that we may have shot that plane down. Then Vice President Dick Cheney did order that plane be shot down. With us right now is Richard Gage. He is a San Francisco Bay Area architect of 30-plus years, a member of the American Institute of Architects, and the founder and CEO of Architects and Engineers for the 9/11 Truth. Richard began his quest for the truth about the collapse of the World Trade Center high-rises after hearing on the radio and startling conclusions of reluctant 9/11 researcher David Ray Griffin. Richard, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, George. Great to be here with you again.
I can't believe it's been 18 years, Richard. I can't believe it's gone by like that, that fast.
No, it flies. It flies. And yet, for some of us, it's been really slow. In another perspective, George, because we've been at it, myself, 12 years, trying to get the mainstream media to pay attention to what really happened in the destruction of these towers.
And this was a very busy day for you and your organization. There were many, many events that you participated in today.
Yeah, today is the busiest day of us. For us every year. We've been in Washington, D.C., talking with with the first responders, along with appointments with several congressional members. I spoke with Representative Steve King today personally about this information, and it was fascinating, his response.
And let's make it clear for people who are brand new to the program. You are not saying that planes did not hit these buildings, as some people have attested to. I mean, we all saw these horrible things 18 years ago. What you are saying is you're not quite sure it was the planes that brought these buildings down. Is that correct?
I'm quite sure it wasn't the planes that brought these buildings down, or the jet fuel fires that followed them.
And we're going to get into the reasons why, as an architect, you and so many other people, what, 700 people now, architects and engineers, are calling for a new investigation. Do you think after 18 years, Richard, we will ever get that new investigation?
Absolutely. The 3,000 architects and engineers that have signed our petition demanding a new investigation are determined that we will get that investigation. And if we don't get it by the current Congress, we will have an upswelling of conscience and an outswelling of public outrage about the truth about 9/11, because more and more people are becoming aware. I mean, 50% of the people in America now believe something's fishy about the World Trade Center towers. Half of those can cite the basic points of evidence that we're going to be covering today.
When you saw this happen 18 years ago, at what point did you start saying there's something else going on here?
Well, unfortunately, it took me 5 years before I even heard any alternative theory about how these towers came down. So I simply swallowed the official story, hook, mm-hmm. line, and sinker, even though they don't even look like collapses, these twin towers. They look like an exploding burst of hundreds of explosions with the geometry.
Well, it looks like a demolition.
It's very, I mean,
very when you look at buildings in Vegas that they take down, it looks the same thing, like the same way.
Well, particularly Building 7, the third tower that most architects and engineers are completely unaware of, even though this skyscraper is the third worst structural failure in modern history. And we're talking about Building 7, a 47-story high-rise that on the afternoon of 9/11 drops like a rock straight down uniformly, symmetrically into its own footprint in under 7 seconds.
We're going to talk about all of this, Richard, when we come back in a moment. Plus, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Richard Gage here on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie back with you along with architect Richard Gage. Now, United Airlines Flight 93 was a domestic scheduled passenger flight that was hijacked by four Al-Qaeda terrorists on board as part of the 9/11 attacks. It crashed into a field in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, during an attempt by the passengers and crew to regain control. All 44 people on board were killed, including the four hijackers. No one on the ground was injured. The aircraft involved the Boeing 757-222 was flying United Airlines' daily scheduled morning flight from Newark International Airport in New Jersey to San Francisco International Airport in California. The hijackers stormed the aircraft's cockpit 46 minutes after takeoff. The pilot and first officer took measures, such as deactivating the autopilot to hinder the hijackers. But Ziad Zora, who had trained as a pilot, took control of the aircraft, diverted it back toward the East Coast in the direction of Washington, D.C., the U.S. capital, of course. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Ramzi bin Shalib, considered principal investigators of the attack, have claimed that the intended target was the U.S. Capitol building. There are some that believe that we had to shoot that plane down as well. Strangely, the debris has been scattered for miles with this plane crash. Now, when a plane crashes, the debris stays right there where it crashes. It doesn't scatter for miles. So something happened very strangely there. What I'm going to let you listen to is an air traffic controller talking to Flight 93. You'll hear the pilot for a little bit. Then you'll hear other airline pilots who heard something. And then you will hear apparently one of the hijackers who claims there was a bomb on board.
United 93, that traffic view is 1 o'clock, 12 miles eastbound, 370.
Negative contact, we're looking at United 93.
Somebody call Cleveland. United 93, verify 350. United 93, verify your level 350. United 93, verify your level of 350. United 93, Cleveland. United 93, Cleveland. United 93, did you hear Cleveland Center, right down, please?
United 1523, did you hear your company, some interference on the frequency here a couple of minutes ago, screaming?
Yes, I did, 797, and we couldn't tell what it was either.
Okay. United 93, Cleveland, if you hear the center, right down.
An American 1060, a ditto on the other transmission.
American 1060, you heard that also?
Yes, sir, twice.
Roger, we heard that also, thanks. I just wanted to confirm it wasn't some interference.
Was that 956?
Was that 956, go.
Oh, we're just answering your call. We did hear that yelling, too.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we're just trying to figure out what's going on.
What is that going on here? They got some things to talk. Keep remaining to be. We have a ball board. So, it's
there. Calling Cleveland Center, you're unreadable. Say again slowly.
Did you hear the transmission? Was that your buddy that said he had a bomb on board?
Say again. Was that United 93?
Yeah, that transmission, you said, was unreasonable. It sounded like someone said they have a bomb on board.
That's what we thought. We didn't get it clear. Is that United 93 calling? Executive 956, that aircraft we believe was transmitting is 12 o'clock, 5 miles. Turn left, heading 225. I'll get you away from him. Okay, he's climbing, so I want to keep everybody away from him.
Okay, I think we got him in sight.
Well, the 1989, that traffic views at 11 o'clock and 15 miles southbound. 41 climbing. Looks like he's turning east by heading 360.
Here's the captain. Would like to call the main ticket. On the board and going to back to the airport and hand over command. Remain quiet.
Okay, it's United 93 calling. United 93, understand you have a bomb on board. Go ahead. Executive 956, did you understand that transmission?
The affirmative. He said there was a bomb on board.
And that was all you got out of it also?
Okay, affirmative.
93, go ahead.
That aircraft, he can't get a hold of. Has he turned to the east now?
He's just turned to the east also. United 93, you hear Cleveland Center. Okay, American 1060 and Executive 956, we just lost the target on that aircraft.
Okay, 956, we had a visual out of this standby.
Do you have a visual on him now?
We did, but we lost him at the turn.
You can make a turn back to a 220 heading. Let me know if you can see him.
Yeah, he's still there. We got him for 956.
He's still there. Northwest of you, about 25 miles.
Affirmative for 956.
You got your 956 fighting 180.
Hey, we're making a turn for 956. He appears to be heading right towards us.
American 1060, do you see anybody northwest of you? Can you shoot back that farther?
We're looking now, sir.
Okay. United 93, Cleveland, do you still hear the center? United 93, do you still hear Cleveland? United 93, United 903, do you hear Cleveland? United 93, United 93, Cleveland. United 93, United 93, do you hear Cleveland Center?
Do you see any activity on your right side, smoke or anything like that?
Negative, we're searching. Yeah, we do have a smoke puff now at about, probably 2 o'clock. It appears to be just a dark cloud, like a puff of black smoke.
So by that time, the plane that had crashed in that field, all 44 people on board had perished. Richard, let's bring you back in. You heard that tragedy as well. Let's talk now on the theory of the architects and engineers in terms of what you think happened to the Twin Towers and Building 7.
Well, what we look at is the scientific forensic evidence and the eyewitness testimony with respect to these towers. And we were talking about, before the break, World Trade Center Building 7, the third skyscraper that collapses. Now, at 5:20 in the afternoon, let's just look at the facts, right?
Okay.
It drops straight down uniformly, symmetrically, in under 7 seconds in the exact manner of a controlled demolition, like the old hotels in Las Vegas. This is after witnesses hear explosions, explosions which are not a part of the official story of this building's collapse, which are the official story produced by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. 7 years after the collapse of this building is when this report came out, when everybody forgot about it. I mean, those of us who knew about it,
right.
Most architects and engineers and most everybody else didn't even know about this third skyscraper. So this is an extraordinary failure. I mean, if NIST came out and said, well, this happened by normal office fires, you know, no plane hit this building, right? Well, office fires have never brought down a skyscraper before 9/11 in history, ever. So this should have been the most studied failure ever.
And there couldn't have been that much debris that fell on Building 7.
Well, there was some. NIST says that the damage by the debris is not a significant factor in the building's collapse. So, okay, what was?
What was, so, exactly.
These fires in these buildings, according to the photos and videos that we have, are scattered and few and small. They are not engulfing the building, even though some, including NIST, claims that they were. But they're clearly just a few scattered fires. And this says, well, these were blazing under the third floor at the time of the collapse. Well, the photos show that the fires were out in the area of the northeast section where they say the initiation of collapse happened. So they couldn't have been responsible for the thermal expansion of these long span beams in this building, which NIST says push a girder off of its seat on this particular column 79 and then cause an internal cascading collapse all the way up to the roof and then sideways all the way across the building, leaving the building hollow and gutted until we then see its overall collapse. Well, had any of that happened, we would have had massive deformation on the exterior structural steel frame, breaking of granite panels by the thousands on the outside, and windows also. None of this is observed in the collapse of this building. It's a straight-down uniform collapse. We've all seen it, like the old hotels in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Now, Richard, absent Building 7, let's take it out of the picture for just a moment. Just deal with the two Twin Towers. The fact that we saw these two planes smash into those buildings and everything else, would that alone, those two planes, have caused the two Twin Towers to go down?
Well, even NIST says no. The planes damaged some columns, but it was the fires after the jet fuel lit them And then the jet fuel burned up 90% of it, according to NIST, outside the building. The rest of it was gone in 10 minutes. So even NIST says we're talking about normal office fires in these towers. Now, the observations in the video show thick black smoke clouds at the time of the collapse, indicating cool, oxygen-starved fires. And the flames are going out, especially in the South Tower, which Chief Oriel Palmer made it to the 78th floor and said we could put it out with two lines. So that's his radio back to headquarters. And so at the time of the collapse, which is, by the way, just an hour after the South Tower is hit and an hour and a half after the North Tower is hit. So the fireproofing in these buildings is designed to last 2 and 3 hours to keep these buildings safe for occupants, enough time for occupants
to get out of there.
To leave. So we have another problem. Well, what other evidence is there besides what NIST has given us in their 10,000-page report full of obfuscation and a complete a deterring from the task which they were assigned with by Congress, which is to explain the collapse of the building? But hidden on footnote 13 and page 82 of their report, they have their own agenda. It's to describe the up to the initiation of collapse. They do not calculate or analyze the capability of the cold, hard, intact structure below the point of jet plane impacts to resist the falling mass above. They completely stop at the initiation of collapse. This is not a collapse report at all. So we need a report that actually examines what can the upper part of the lightest, weakest part of a structure destroy the rest of it. Well, in 2 days after 9/11, Chicago Northwestern's Zdenek Bazant submits a paper just 2 days after 9/11. Very complex, another obfuscating piece of mathematical artwork designed to confuse structural engineers. He says the upper part drove the rest of the building down to the ground and then destroyed itself, called the crush-down, crush-up theory. This remains the theoretical basis for NIST's column failure theory, and it's impossible, because it completely violates the laws of physics. The third law, conservation of momentum, says there's an equal and opposite destructive force when two bodies collide. So it's like running a Volkswagen into a Mack truck. Who wins, right?
Exactly.
So the upper lightest part would be destroyed itself in the first few seconds of a descending collapse. And in fact, that's exactly what the videos show, contrary to what NIST says happened here. It's destroyed in 4 seconds. It's basically liquefied. It telescopes in on itself. After that, there's additional explosions, which blow out 4-ton and 8-ton structural steel sections, thousands of them, as this building descends in its 12-second destruction, shattering the structure from top to bottom, hurling these incredibly heavy sections at 80 miles an hour laterally out of the towers, landing in every direction, 600 feet. There's enough energy in these things to fire a 200-pound cannonball 3 miles. So this is going on. Meanwhile, down below, you have 20, 40, 60 stories down below the point of the zone of destruction, these isolated explosive ejections called squibs in the controlled demolition industry, which are blowing out at 150 to 200 feet per second, with solids expelled out of the building up to 60 stories below. They're very visible in all the videos. And before any of this happens, before the collapse even happens, we have 156 first responders orally recorded on tape, which we finally have the record of, thanks to the New York Times, who sued the city to get these oral recording transcripts. Now they've been, in August of 2005, they were reported.
Well, Richard, let me ask you this, though, and I want to get into the demolition of this and your speculation on why you think this was done. But Why a controlled demolition on these buildings, if it happened, when you have the two planes hitting the buildings as drama enough, that was horrible all by itself, why did you need to have the buildings go down too? Why not just stop with the horror of the planes hitting the buildings in terms of the effect?
I didn't plan this, so, you know, I don't know what the strategy is, but what the evidence shows and what these 156 witnesses of explosions, even before the towers collapsed, show is that they were pre-placed explosives in this building. What the scientific evidence from the dust shows is that the USGS finding molten iron microspheres, the diameter of a human hair, billions of them, up to 10 tons of this previously molten iron material. They document it. The EPA says it's a signature component of the World Trade Center dust. So it's not even World Trade Center dust unless it has these iron microspheres. Well, that takes 2,800 degrees, George. 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit, which is six times the burning, the temperature capability of even jet fuel.
Wow.
And four times what office fires can even get to. So here we have extreme temperatures documented in the towers that reveal the evidence not of office fires, not of jet fuel, but of something worse. The molten iron is the byproduct of thermite.
Hold on, Richard. We're at the top of the hour already, but we will come back again with more in just a moment. Richard Gage with us on Coast to Coast AM.